When we have discussions of public land in the region, it tends to be federal land. The national government owns big chunks of both states, and its decisions on things like forest management get a lot of eyeballs and a lot of comments. The state of Oregon owns large patches of land, too, not as large, but big enough to require resource management plans to be made. The Western Oregon State Forest Management Plan is now out in draft form and has been for several weeks. The comment deadline on this Western Oregon State Forest Management Plan is January 31st. Here's our chance to get familiar with the general shape of the plan. We have two guests from the Oregon Department of Forestry, ODF. Liz Dent is the State Forests Division Chief. She joins us by phone. Welcome, Liz.
Thank you, Jeffrey.
Dave Larson is with us as well. He is the Southwest Oregon District Forester, so he can answer some questions about the Southwest Oregon District specifically. Hi, Dave.
Hey, good morning.
Liz, let's start with you. The biggest chunks are in Tillamook, the Clatsop, and Santiam forests. Where's the rest of the land that is covered in this report scattered?
We have land bases throughout Oregon from the northwest corner, as you mentioned, up in Clatsop County around Astoria and all the way down to the border with California in Klamath County. Mm-hmm. So both in western Oregon and eastern Oregon.
Compared to the U.S. Forest and Forest Service and BLM holdings, are these pretty small by comparison?
Yeah, that's correct. State forests account for about 3 to 4% of the forest land base in Oregon.
Okay, that is pretty small compared to what the federal government owns, for sure. Dave Larson, where are most of the state forest lands within the Southwest Oregon District?
Yeah, most of the forest lands here in the Southwest Oregon District is approximately about 18,000 acres, and most of those lands are going to be located over in Josephine County and then working their way up into the southern part of Douglas County, up and around the Glendale-McCullough Creek area. And we have a little bit of lands scattered amongst Jackson County as well. So it's pretty much kind of a very spread out across the landscape of both Jackson and Josephine County.
How did the state come into possession of these lands?
Liz, you want to answer that one?
Yeah, of course. These lands were deeded to the state of Oregon in the 30s, 40s, and some in the 50s as well. After they were sort of burnt over and logged over, they became tax delinquent. The counties took them over and then deeded them to the state for reforestation and forest management over the long term.
All right, so a reconveyance. They were privately owned at one time, and then the private owners didn't meet their responsibilities and ended up moving into public hands.
That's correct.
So, Dave Larson, in Southwest Oregon, there was a reference in the report to these are fairly, well, I don't want to call them landlocked. I mean, obviously, everything's, you know, away from the ocean here, but it seems like these are hard places to get to, potentially.
In some cases, they are hard places to get to, and then as you start to get down into southern Oregon, the forest landscape actually changes quite a bit. You know, obviously, if you go up to Tillamook and take a look around at the forest there and the trees, it's a wetter forest. As you start getting down into the Rogue Basin here in the Klamath Mountains, you start to see a transitional phase. So you don't necessarily, in a lot of these places, have the most productive lands to actually for tree growth. So there's a lot of places where, you know, you've got a lot of brush and stuff, and they just because of the climate and the nature of the slopes and the topography down here does make it a little more difficult for trees to grow.
Liz mentioned lands that have been burned over and logged over. Is that often the case with the lands in the Southwest Oregon District?
Yeah, there are several here. I mean, there are a lot of good places where, you know, you get on the north slopes and you get up and get a little bit of elevation to get over there in Josephine County. But we do have some areas that just historically, you know, the fuel type or timber type that should be there is more of a pine or oak savanna. And for, you know, whatever cases, a lot of the merchantable trees, obviously, with Douglas fir was the most desirable species. And typically when those trees get to about a certain age group here, they're off-site species, and they become more susceptible for insect and disease.
All right, we have much more to talk about with disease as we go into this discussion about Swiss needle cast and some of the other things mentioned in the Western Oregon State Forest Management Plan. Dave Larson, Liz Dent, our guests from Oregon Department of Forestry, ODF. You can join us on the exchange at 800-838-3760 by phone, by email, jx@jeffnet.org. Dave, how big a part of the job of the district to manage these lands versus the other duties that you have in any ODF district office?
Well, actually, we've had some changes in our structure in the last couple of years. The forest management, the 18,000 acres that we were in charge of here in the Southwest Oregon District, we've now restructured that, and those lands are actually being managed out of the state forest program out of the Bonita office. And a lot of that has to do with just the, you know, how spread out that we are and the with those 18,000, you know, acres, you know, spread out over about a 2 million acre district. And so with those lands, it was decided that for efficiency to try to centralize those and better utilize our limited amount of personnel staff to try to manage these forests. So most of what I'm handling here now out of the Southwest Oregon District is our private forest program, which is the regulatory part of the Forest Practices Act. And then our biggest program, which everyone's really familiar about, is our fire program, which is our largest program here on the district.
I kind of figured that was number one. All right. Liz Dent, in laying out any management plan, you've got some competing values to address. Would you walk us through those and basically how you prioritize them?
Yeah, Jeffrey. So these lands are, as we just discussed, owned by the people of Oregon. And we are managing them for what we call greatest permanent value, which is established in statute and Oregon administrative rule. Basically boils down to managing these lands to provide healthy, productive forests, to create and maintain high-quality fish and wildlife habitat, clean water, clean air, revenue to the counties to help support rural communities, and other social benefits, such as recreation, education, protecting cultural resources, tribal relations. So it is really a broad set of goals for managing these forests, and the forest management plan is a vehicle by which we establish how we're going to do that and how we're going to achieve those goals.
When was the last management plan put into place?
The plan that we operate under at this moment was initially adopted in 2000, and then it was updated and revised in 2010, and then we went through the financial crisis just as the rest of the country and really the world did in 2009, and so we are looking at revising the plan again with the intent to improve both financial and conservation outcomes.
How closely observed has the last plan been, even through the revision?
We're currently implementing the forest management plan. If by observed you mean implementing the plan?
Yeah, I mean, how closely did you stick to the plan?
Yeah, we are. There's some key aspects of the current plan that have to do with both creating and maintaining habitat for fish and wildlife, and while at the same time producing sustainable timber, particularly for rural communities. So we're able to do that and have been able to do it since the initial plan was adopted in 2000. What we find is that because of some financial challenges, we end up being constrained on some of the other benefits that we're trying to provide. So, for example, we haven't really been able to grow our recreation program. We've been fairly limited in our monitoring program and research to evaluate how the plan is working. And then in some other sort of basic data collection pieces for managing the land were pretty significantly reduced after 2009.
How much of the budget for the ODF comes out of sales of timber off these lands?
All of the revenue comes from the sale of timber. And the revenue comes in to the Department of Forestry. About two-thirds of that revenue is distributed back to the counties in which we manage those forests. And the remaining one-third is what stays with the department to fund our operations.
Okay. So I see 63.75. That's the figure that goes to the counties, and then the rest is what stays with ODF?
That's correct.
Mm-hmm. How different is the draft plan on the table now, Liz Dent, from the previous one, the one that was revised in 2010?
There's some key changes. We're really looking at doing a better job of threading climate change into the current forest management plan. In 2000, we certainly knew a lot about climate change, but we know more now. And so we're addressing that a little bit more upfront in this revised draft. We're also incorporating what we call measurable outcomes. And what this will do is is provide some quantifiable measures that we can use to determine if we're achieving the desired outcomes for the plan. So it's very outcome-oriented, less about specific standards. And then we've really streamlined the plan, and in doing so, tried to provide greater clarity around how we're managing for those multiple benefits that we've talked about.
All right, a lot of different things, which end up in some cases being competing interests, I would think, if you're trying to preserve habitat for some creatures, that works against things like timber cutting.
It certainly, you're right that those can be competing sources. And so really the way we see our mandate is to be able to manage these forests to meet the revenue expectations and support for timber-related economies, but do it in a way that also protects habitat for fish and wildlife. And I'd say we're pretty good at doing that. Ultimately, how to strike that balance is what is sort of the subject of much of the public discourse.
This is the Jefferson Exchange. We're talking about the Western Oregon State Forest Management Plan, now out in draft form and available for comment until January 31st. Two guests with us from the Oregon Department of Forestry. Liz Dent is the State Forests Division Chief. Dave Larson is the Southwest Oregon District Forester. Questions and comments from you are welcome on the Exchange at 800-838-3760, by phone, by email, jx@jeffnet.org. Liz, let's talk lawsuits, because there have been plenty over the years, and of course, the recent Linn County jury ruling in favor of Western Oregon counties that the state owes them more than $1 billion for not logging enough. That lawsuit, any lawsuit really, if they've had any effect on the management plan, talk about that.
Yeah, you bet. So the Linn County lawsuit was obviously front and center over the past 2 to 3 months, with the trial happening in October, late October and November. And the way that lawsuit was constructed is as a class action lawsuit for the counties in which we manage these lands. And the claim was that the statute that was written in 1942 represents a contract, and that because of the way we're managing for these multiple benefits, that we were in breach of the contract. So the jury agreed with that, and actually supported the notion of damages being provided. Both past damages and future damages were awarded to the counties. So we intend to appeal the case through our Department of Justice and the Attorney General's office. So in terms of what does it mean to us today, because of the way that lawsuit was structured, really, and the award of damages into the future, what that means is that it doesn't really require us to do anything differently now. Because if you think about it, the counties will have received damages going into the future, meaning they would have been paid for the trees that we wouldn't be harvesting as per our current forest management plan.
All right. So basically, you move ahead with the forest management plan as you would anyway, and let
That's
the core
correct.
Stuff handle itself off on the side.
That's correct.
All right. There is you mentioned greatest permanent value, GPV, which is all over the plan and obviously throughout the lawsuit as well. How carefully defined is greatest permanent value, or GPV?
Well, it's established in statute and further defined in Oregon administrative rule. And it calls out pretty clearly what the overall goals and objectives are. So protecting, maintaining, and restoring properly functioning aquatic habitat is an example. Providing for long-term sustainable flow of timber would be another example. So it does call out those objectives for the different parts of greatest permanent value. It does not go down to X percent of streams will have a certain kind of habitat, but it does lay out what the expectations are.
Does it in any way prioritize timber over things like watershed restoration?
It doesn't establish a priority.
Okay, that was the big one. Thanks. So, and Liz, what has been the trend in logging on the state forest lands over the last couple of decades? I mean, is it up, down, basically flat?
Well, the trend in logging is partly dependent on when our purchasers harvest the timber that they've bought from state forests. But basically, we have annual harvest objectives that ranges between about 225 to 230 million board feet a year. That will bounce around from year to year, again, depending on when the purchasers actually harvest those trees. And they have about 3 years within which to harvest a sale that they've purchased.
Okay, so 3 years, 225 million to 230. And then is that for all state forests or just Western Oregon?
That's for all of our state forests.
Okay. Now, Dave Larson, specific to Southwest Oregon, what's been the trend in logging?
Well, the trend, obviously, a lot of economic factors in there. A couple of years ago, the market was up pretty well, and so we saw an increase of our number of notifications and folks that were actually doing timber harvest and forest management activities. Right now, I'd say the trend is probably about average to where we'd expected. We haven't seen a huge uptick like we did 2 years ago, but I would say looking at our notifications, we're getting about 900 notifications out of this district office a year. So that's about on trend where we've seen the past 10 years. And when I say notifications, that's just not with, logging. That also has to do with, any forest activity. It could be road building, tree planting, those sorts of activities.
Now, how about non-commercial thinning projects to reduce fire intensity? Are there many of those going on in the state forest in Southwest Oregon?
Yeah, absolutely. A lot of our projects that we have are funded through Title III FireWise programs. We actually seek out federal funding to try to go and work on the landscape. Primarily, we've got the largest wildland urban interface here in the state of Oregon. It's right here in the Southwest Oregon District. So we try to identify those high-risk, high-prone fire areas where we can actually go in there and, try to thin out the forest and make it more fire resilient. We also have a couple of other projects that we're working with our partners with the U.S. Forest Service and the BLM, but we're working with the Good Neighbor Authority, and that's where we're going out there and in areas that they've identified that needs fuels treatments, where you go in there and you do some thinning, some slashing, and pile burning, and try to restore those landscapes and try to take care of the fuels issues that we have out here in the forest. So there's quite a bit of that's going on in the district, and we've been doing a lot of that work since the National Fire Plan really took effect, and that was back in the early 2000s. So we're really trying to increase the pace and scale of the work that we're doing there on the landscape.
So you got national things you're looking at, the state forest management plan you're looking at. It sounds like there's a bunch of different tugs on your attention.
Oh, absolutely, absolutely. I mean, the forest never stops growing, and so we can't stop doing what we're doing, trying to be proactive. And, we're in a very high fire prone area. And so with the population that's been increasing, if you go back to the 70s and look at now, I mean, we've over doubled our population here in the Rogue Valley. So looking for those opportunities, and a lot of folks like to move out into the rural setting. And so that does add a whole nother level of complexities when we start having homes that are out here in these, landscapes that, frequently have fire.
Liz Dent and Dave Larson are guests on the Jefferson Exchange from the Oregon Department of Forestry, talking about the Western Oregon State Forest Management Plan. Liz Dent, we mentioned Swiss needle cast earlier. This seems to be a major concern in state forests. Tell us what that's about.
Yeah, Swiss needle cast is a disease that affects largely Douglas fir trees, and it's a disease that causes the needles to be cast right in springtime, which is typically when the trees are going through the major growth spurt. And so if they lose their needles, then that really reduces their growth rate. And so what we're seeing in the past few years is that there's greater severity and extent of Swiss needle cast than we had expected, and that really is primarily, we're seeing that as a very large issue in Tillamook County, in our Tillamook State Forest.
All right, so definitely in the northwestern part of the state, but not so much in southern Oregon.
That's right. And again, what it does is it restricts growth, and therefore what we're not really seeing an increase in volume, if you will, on these state forests. And it also reduces the health of the forest, which ultimately also impacts the conservation benefits. So it's having an effect on both the potential to produce timber as well as creating the high-quality habitat for wildlife.
So, Liz Dent, how can people comment on the Western Oregon State Forest Management Plan? I know they have until January 31st.
They have until January 31st, and there's a couple ways that they can do it. One is on our website, there's a link that they can click on that gets them to the plan and can allow them to review the plan. And there's also a survey that they can take, and then there's an email box where they can send their questions. And so we are collecting all that information, and we'll be able to summarize that and make changes to the plan based on the feedback that we're hearing. And any feedback that we're not able to incorporate, we'll be able to document that feedback and explain why.
We have an email here from Barbara in Grants Pass who just writes, some of the state of Oregon lands in southwest Oregon are pristine and have very high conservation values. There's state forest lands on serpentine soils with rare plants and wildlands. That sure sounds like the Illinois Valley. Some are in the watersheds of National Wild and Scenic Rivers. One parcel is in the direct watershed of a BLM research natural area and area of critical environmental concern and is essential to the maintenance of the wetlands in the BLM ACEC, area of critical environmental concern. That's from Barbara in Grants Pass. I'm sure she's relaying that to you as well, Liz Dent. And so thank you both for joining us today on the Jefferson Exchange to catch us up on what's going on with the Western Oregon State Forest Management Plan. You just heard how to comment on it. Liz Dent is the State Forests Division Chief for the Oregon Department of Forestry. Dave Larson, the Southwest Oregon District Forester. Thank you again both for joining us today on the Jefferson Exchange.
You bet.
Thank you for your time.
You bet. Short break coming on the Jefferson Exchange. We'll return with Marketplace Tech and later on this month's Stories of Southern Oregon. This is the Jefferson Exchange on JPR.